Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is International Black Summit Talk Show Network coming to you live in color. Just enjoying the evening. Just want to let you know some of the things that are available. And we're just coming off our annual event that took place in Ottawa, Canada. That was pretty spectacular. And we had a wonderful time. We had a bunch of beautiful people in Ottawa, Canada this year. It was very nice. Very nice, very nice, very nice. Anyway, let's get started with the declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community, possibility, and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity, the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7, 1991. September 22nd, 2013. North, south, east, west, above, below, within, a moment of silence, please. Thank you. Okay. All righty. So we're just moving and moving. And looking forward to the next event. We have actually an event in October. Coming up, our next kind of like our follow-up event, and from the annual event. So we're having our first. This is like our first meeting of the year, October. That'll be up in Ottawa. And let me. The purpose of the International Black Summit is to provide an opportunity for participants to bring into being their vision for the black community and the world. So those are the things that's the purpose. And, of course, the question for this year, we have a question, inquiry, declaration. So those are things that we've had the media, and we dwell on that for the entire year. And the question that we're standing in this year is, what do my triggers reveal that provide me access to alignment with my authentic self? Am I aligned with my authentic self and with my vision? That's something for you to think about, look at, look into, find out, you know, what you're up to. Hey, Henrietta Bird.
Hey, Glenn Greenwich.
How you doing, my dear?
I'm good. Welcome back.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've been missing the Sunday nights. I'm telling you, Something special about it. Absolutely. So I'm just letting them know a little bit about the event coming up in October in Ottawa, and then we've got so we just had our annual event. That's the first weekend in August, and we have what they call planning meetings where we have the facilitators get together that Friday, and then on Saturday and Sunday we look through the work of the summit, the business, policies, procedures, and, you know, different kinds of things like that. And then we also have, so that's what the planning weekend looks like, and then we have retreats. So the facilitator body may have a retreat. We have prerequisites, which is how people can participate. So there's a prerequisite program, which is a one-day program that you can do in your various city. And it's a standalone course that you can actually get some real good insight to what the International Black Summit is, some of the tools that you were working with, the key tools you're working with. And then we've got Summit Shares, and those are pretty much the events that we have. And matter of fact, we used to have an online Summit Share. They're going to be doing sometime. They haven't decided when, but we also have a youth portion of the International Black Summit as well. So we've got the youth, and we've got the adults, and then we just this year initiated the young adult space. So that's from 18 to 35. So, you know, you don't have to hang out in the adult space. You can still hang out in the young adult space if you so choose. But so we have three spaces to offer. I think that that's a pretty exciting opportunity for the family to participate on all different levels. So how are you doing, Henrietta Bird? What's happening in Chicago? I hear all kinds of horrific stuff happening there, and it's like, you know, but I was listening to something the other day, and they were asking the question is, why is there so much violence in the black community? And I have to say, and the gentleman said, well, think about it. It's the highest unemployment. It's the most drugs going up in there. If you can't feed your family, you're going to be violent. So when you look at the violence, you look at what's causing that. So you know the jobs and the drugs and the things that you got to do to feed your family. So it's like stop trying to act like this. It's not related. So that being said, how are you, my dear?
I am well, and it's real interesting that you brought that up. I was just in a conversation, just not 30 minutes ago, about how to handle things when, you know, how to handle things within a family structure when you have certain needs, you know, like not being able to feed your family and not being able to do your part, what you feel is your part. You know, I was really reminded when you said that of Steve Harvey's book, the first book, Think Like a Man. You know, that book, in that book he says, you know, women can't expect men to do or be a particular way when they don't know how they're going to take care of themselves. So how can they take care of you? You know, that's a statement that he made. And you know, when you think about that across the board, it's not just men who feel like that. Women in those same situations, you know. And there's something that I've been present to recently. I've been reading this book, The Warmth of Other Suns, and it's a 600-page book, and it's about migration, the migration. And it tracks these three people who migrated from the South in the 30s. One went to California, one went to New York, upstate New York, and one to Milwaukee to Chicago, went to Milwaukee first and then to Chicago. And one of those people ended up in Manhattan. But it's really three main characters in this book. But what's so interesting about it, Glenn, is it talks about the reason they left the South. The reason that they left the South, and it's very detailed. If you want to learn about history, you should read this book. It tells you every nook and cranny, every detail of what it was like to be a free slave, a freed slave. And the challenges, you know, even these three people, one of them had to sneak out. He was free. He was a free man. But he had to sneak out of the state because if he was a commodity, you know, and if the state found out he was leaving, they would do things, you know. And there, at one time, according to this book, if you were not working, they could put you in jail for not working because there was so much work to be done. Now, you weren't going to get a fair wage, but they were going to make you work and get paid pennies. And so, you know, when I'm not finished with the book, but just getting them out of the South was, oh, my God. It was really something. Yeah. One came out of Florida, one came out of Louisiana, and one out of Alabama and Georgia. And it was really, you know, you were just like, I found myself praying that these people would get out because it's, you know, like it's so intense that you just wonder, are they going to make it? Well, you know the book is about it, and it's the beginning of the book, so you know they will, but you don't know if they're going to get out with all of their limbs. You don't know if they're going to get out in their right mind. You know, you don't know at the beginning of the book. The name of the book is The Warmth of Other Suns, and Wilkerson is the author, female author, black female author, and it's really, really interesting. Well, reading that book put me in a particular frame of mind because I started reading the book after I saw The Butler, and I've seen The Butler four times already.
Oh, have you?
Mm-hmm. And there's something, you know, there's something about watching The Butler, and when you watch it, like for me, it took me places, you know, it just took me back to certain things. And it took me in a way that when I come back, they had moved on in the movie. And I had to kind of catch up as to what was going on because it was intense. Some of those things, you know, and you think about them and when you think of where you were at that particular time, then, you know, it lets you know that one of the reasons I believe that there's so much crime in the black community, it's been passed on. You know, it's like this crabs in a barrel. It's that crabs in a barrel consciousness that I don't want you doing something that I can't do. I don't want you to be ahead of me. I don't want, you know, I don't want you to be successful and I'm not successful, you know, or I'm going to do everything I can to stop your success. And it was that way, you know. One of the guys in the book was fighting for, and he had kind of organized this group of men who went to this to pick oranges every day. They were in Florida. And he had organized them to the degree that he said, we are not going to work for less than a certain amount of money. We are going to be paid because they needed them. The war had started and they needed that, you know, the help was not as plentiful. So he said, we have the upper hand. We are not going to work unless they pay us an honest wage. And he was very successful because they needed them to work. And don't you know that some of the people who were in his group went and told the owners that he's making us not work. He's making us work. You know, like why they say Harriet Tubman carried a gun. Same situation. And so, you know, there's always the people who are afraid to step out, and there are always the people who are willing to step out. And how they communicate with each other has a whole lot to do with violence. You know, someone who's determined to get ahead and someone who's determined to stay where they are, you know. It's real, real, like, interesting, but it has me present to all of that, you know, like all of that. When I look at the, you know, when I think about the violence, especially when it's related, they say, to when it's a territorial thing, you know, it seems like if you would just sit down and talk together, you know, you could work it out. And, you know, like, there's enough out here for everybody. On whatever level you're on, there's enough for everyone. Why is it that you have to take what somebody else has? You know, but there's a mindset, and I think it has come a long way, and depending on who you were raised by, you know, you may have picked up certain things, you know, from your family. You may have picked up certain things from your peers, you know. It's just really, really interesting to, that's just the whole thing. It's really, really interesting. And then there are those people who are doing well and becoming, you know, they're just successful, what we consider successful. There's all of that going on as well. But, of course, the media focuses on the other part. So there's a lot about that, you know, a lot to be said about that, you know, and how you break through when you're in a situation, you know, like how you break through. In the book, one of the men, he goes to Morehouse and Macari, and he becomes a doctor. And he marries the daughter of a very well-to-do, very successful person, another African-American person. And there's this family issue. You know, family, they're like, the family didn't want her to be with her husband, you know. So he had to deal with all of that. And he's a doctor. And he's dealing with being a doctor and not being able to practice at certain hospitals because he's a Negro. Mm-hmm. And not only that, you know, he was a very, very good doctor. Had to be. And when he went to certain hospitals in the North, the Caucasian people didn't want him working on them until they found out he could do things that the white doctors couldn't do. Then they wanted him. But then the other thing was, the black people didn't want him working on them. Okay. Okay. So, you know.
So he couldn't win.
Like,
he couldn't win.
I didn't hear you.
He couldn't win.
He couldn't win. I mean, you know, it was just interesting. And so he, one of the things he decides to do is he starts working for these, it's almost like, it's kind of likened to now, you know, how when you apply for insurance, how they send the medics out to come and give you certain tests, you know, and he started doing things like that, just to make money because he was qualified to do it. So he just started doing things like that until he got to the place where he could work in hospitals and then a friend just started feeding him some of his clients, you know. But it's really interesting how the quote unquote, and I don't like to call it a struggle, but that's what it's most known as, how that struggle continues, you know, because that mindset, there are these mindsets that we, for some reason, won't make, you know, we don't get over them. You know, we, on some level, it's just difficult. It's difficult to deal with stuff, you know. When we're, you know, like when we're presented with it, it takes a very healthy, emotionally healthy person, mentally healthy person, physically healthy person to be successful. You know, because you have to be able to deal with your own challenges, your own inner challenges. And if you are not physically healthy, that makes it difficult. You know, if you're not emotionally healthy, that makes it even more difficult. You know, and so, you know, that's what I see when it, you know, when it comes to certain things. And we don't pay attention to each other because we're so into not being in anybody else's business. You know, that's the whole thing. That's not my business. You know, where before everything was everybody's business. Now it's like, that's not my business. That's not my family. That's not my friend. You know, I'm not concerned about that. Where, you know, it might not be your friend. It might not be your family member. But when your child is in the park and that person, that same person that you, you know, separated yourself from goes berserk, then it becomes your problem. Then it becomes your family. You know, then it becomes one of your friends. And so, you know, it's like this separation that we sometimes allow that I think has a lot to do with it also.
Yeah, all of those are absolute facts. Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And for me, it's the economics. It's the bottom line economics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the root. You know, you go back to it. If you can't provide for your family, it makes you do different things, and some of those things become violent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a church by my house, and they give out food, you know, one day a week. And the lines are so long, like if I'm sitting with my window open, I can hear, you know, like the conversations of the people. And it's survival, you know, most of the people who are standing in the lines are, they do have assistance. You know, they do get assistance. But the assistance that they get is not enough. So they go, you know, they come and they get food. You know, you determine how you eat. You know, people determine different ways of feeding their family. And you get assistance, federal assistance, and then you, you know, you learn how to make it work. And so some of the conversations are where to go every day. So they have a system, the people in these lines, they have a system. They go someplace every day and they get food every day of every week. Monday through Friday and some Saturdays. But in my neighborhood, there is, in all neighborhoods, I should say, not just mine, but in Chicago, In all neighborhoods, there are places where you can get food every day of the week.
Wow.
Two, three boxes of food. In Hyde Park, in the neighborhood where Obama lives, same thing.
Uh-huh.
In the north side, south side, west side, it doesn't matter. Every day of the week, there are places that you can go and get food in your neighborhood because it goes by your zip code. So it might be this church on one day, the next day it's the church 4 or 5 blocks away, the next church just, the next day it's another church or another community center. But, so it's interesting because it's like the law of supply and demand. There's a demand and the universe is supplying food for everyone, so the people get what they need if they're willing to get up and go and get it. You just have to be willing to go and get it. So, when I look at that demand and then the supply that's been generated based on this demand, and if I just take that same law and I move it over to violence, like how do we handle, and I shouldn't say violence, how do we handle peace? That's the better thing to focus on. It's like, how do we generate peace? We have to demand it at some level. There has to be a demand for it. Just like there is for the food. And, how do we do that? And one of the ways, like I've shared with you earlier this year, was these workshops, these sacred communication workshops, which allow us individuals to be at peace with ourselves. Like they say, peace begins with me. And it doesn't mean being nice to other people. It means being nice to yourself, taking time for yourself to look and see where you are and where you're not. And how do I become peaceful in all areas of my life? How do I do that? And I think if we started there, we could have a great beginning if everybody just looked inside of themselves, or those who have become peaceful with themselves reached out to help someone maybe who was not. I don't know. What do you see, Glenn?
Well, I like the conversation about peace, mm-hmm. looking for the peace and being present to it and being up for having it have as an intention rather than avoiding something. But it certainly is about controlling your thoughts and your intentions and the outcomes. I was reading something the other day, and it was just so profound about what it is that is going to take you to, here it is. You must learn a new way to think before you can master a new way to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that quote really speaks to that and speaks to the potentiality of that we have all the resources that we need. Turning around the conversation that it's insufficient and we don't have enough and we don't have whatever. It's all about that we do have enough and how are we utilizing the resources.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading this article, this book, Powernomics by, I'm doing what's his name? Anderson. Anyway, the book is actually Powernomics. And the book is about we don't have a community. We have a neighborhood. Claude Anderson is the cat, that's his brother's name, PhD Claude Anderson. But anyway, he talks about the conversation of that we were better off when we were segregated because we had our own community.
Yeah.
And we sold to our own community. He says, segregation for us made us dysfunctional in that when you look at all the other communities, that you know, the Jewish community, the Italian, the Greek community, all of those communities have been allowed to exist. But the whole notion of a black community, the only thing that's associated with that is a ghetto type image that the media has projected us. So we live in a neighborhood. We don't live in a community, and unless you have a community, there's no place for you to sell your goods to.
Right.
So, for example, if I'm Greek, I have a, you know, I might have a restaurant, I might have a bakery, I might have a newspaper, I might have, you know, all of those things inside of that particular community. And we don't have that for ourselves, so we end up spending 95% of our income with other communities. The 5% that we do spend inside of our community, only 2% of it is actually African American. The rest, the other 3%, are other races that are servicing our community. You know, when you go over to Korea and you ask, "Oh, listen, I can get you that better," he says, "No, it's not about the money. It's about that I want to buy from another Korean."
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first preference. Yeah, and it could be Korean, it could be Greek, it could be Italian, it could be, you know, whatever. But they prefer to their community. But when we do it, it's racist. But when they do it, it's called a community. So, you know, so when you look at it, you know, part of the conversation is that, is knowing that that exists out there. And that if we're going to work on group economics, like really, then what we need to do is to be able to pass the money inside of our own, inside, first of all, create a community, and then pass money inside of that community. So that's the conversation of group economics that Claude Anderson talks about. And it's not, and interestingly enough, it's not any different than Garveyism. Marcus Garvey talked about, he talked about world black economics. You know, that was the thing that he was talking about, go back to Africa and controlling the whole, you know, the money around the world, not just in the nation. So this is, you know, so there's some validity to all of that and some opportunities, because the Jewish community, a dollar earned in the Jewish community travels 11 times before it leaves the community. So that's 11 businesses are touching that dollar before it leaves the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very, very hard to deal with those kind of economics and not be successful. And that's why they've been so successful. You know, you look at that, you look at what, how are they working with each other? But you have to have the whole chain of command. You have the source of whatever that product is, the distribution, the wholesale, and the retail. You've got to own that whole industry in order to control what happens in it. And unfortunately, we don't do that at this point in time. We've done that for very few industries. So there's lots of opportunities, you know, lots of opportunities for us to look at what and how we can actually pool our resources, because we have enough resources. I remember this advertising company. It was a black-owned advertising company. I was up in Rochester, so it had to have been in the 80s. I want to say the mid-80s, 85, 86, somewhere in there. And he talked about the black American buying power. Now, we're not talking about it even including the West Indies. He was talking about strictly African-American buying habits. He said, well, wait a minute, think about it. We buy the top of the line for everybody. He says, but they don't even advertise to us because they know that we're gonna buy it.
And that, automatically.
Mm-hmm. We're going to, whatever the top of the line. So they don't even waste any money advertising to us because at that point in time, everybody had a Cadillac, a Deuce and a Quarter, you know.
Right.
They knew people would have, and every woman had a mink stole, not just a little jacket, but the full-length
right.
mink coat.
Right, right.
All of those things. And he started naming some things, and I was like, that's true. We always do that. You know, BMW, you know, Mercedes. They don't even advertise. Now, interesting enough, I was talking with this brother in the 90s, and we were going to a small business, networking event, some kind of awards that they were giving out. NAACP was giving out small business awards to these companies. And you look at these young, like Vibe Magazine. Vibe Magazine knows that all them little young teeny boppers are looking at the stuff. So they got all kinds of platinum jewelry and high-end and all the best cars. And we ain't even talking about Lamborghinis and Ferraris and so on and so forth. That's what they're advertising in those magazines to our young people. So, you know, and it's like that whole older, they don't even bother. They ain't even bother them, you know? But it is what it is. It is what it is, my dear.
So what I just heard for myself and your share was one of the ways that I can create peace for myself and contribute to creating a community is starting a business. And it can be any business. It can be any business that I have expertise in or not. Just a business that would employ people, that would share the knowledge that I've gained over the years with other people, and generate money in the community. You know, while I was listening to you, and I was thinking about the things that I've done over the years and the information that I'm sitting on, literally, you know, if I'm not working in that field, if nobody is gaining knowledge from my experience, that's what I mean when I say sitting on it. That if I were to just simply start a business, and it could be one of many that I have expertise in, that would create a demand that would have to, the universe would have to supply. And that would create peace for me as an individual on another level. And it would create peace for those that I would employ or train or educate or that. Is that how we shift economics? Is that one way to do it? And, you know, is my thinking on track there, Glenn, with what you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And when you think about all of the young men who have been caught up in the jails and incarcerated in some kind of form or fashion, and now have strikes against them, so they cannot get back into the mainstream. The opportunity is to create your own business, create your own economy. You know, it's possible. It can be done. But we also have to have the consumerism for our own businesses, consistent with the consumerism that we, with our spending. Because we spend it, but now it's a matter of, you know, where do we spend it? Who do we spend it with?
Right.
I know Timberlands, the gentleman who invented the Timberlands or designed it, made some statement. Like, I don't know, if I knew black people were going to wear it on like they do, I wouldn't have invented it. Well, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody say that to me. I don't buy their product.
I don't buy it, yeah, absolutely.
Look on the street and you look at all these black young people that have it, it's like, well, wait a minute. Did you not hear? Do you not know? But it's not in the consciousness, because that's not something that gets proliferated in the masses. So people don't know about it. People don't get it. People don't understand. And some people, quite frankly, don't care, because that's what's going to keep their feet warm, which is why they started buying it from the get-go when they're hanging out on the corner, you know, slinging. You need something to keep your feet warm, and Timberlands are that. So, I mean, I hear you, but it's like if we begin to look at our buying power collectively, you know, I've said this several times. If we didn't buy one day, or we didn't go to work one day, or we didn't do anything for one day, people would then get a sense of what our real power is. Because if we didn't go to work, we'd shut everything down possible in the world. If we didn't spend one day, I'm not saying that we have enough to topple Wall Street, but the impact would be felt.
Yeah. The other thing, that's what the in that book, The Warmth of Other Suns, that's what the man did. He shut them down.
He organized it in a way.
Yeah. When you know, and they had these trucks that would take groups of men. Well, the group that was on his truck, He convinced them not to work, and that made them crazy, because that meant they couldn't sell any products.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then there will be those people who are like, you know, I got to go to work, I got to pay bills, you know, or I got to, you know, whatever. They would insist on doing that thing, you know, but there still, I believe, would be enough to be successful if it ever got out, you know. And there's something about that. I got this text that said, Democrats, we need to talk. Did you get that?
No.
You know, like, we need to talk. You know, and it's real interesting, because when you were talking about that, I was just thinking about how powerful we really are. Like, I believe if everybody just stopped buying gas.
One day.
Just don't buy it. Just one day, nobody buy gas. Nobody. Figure out how you're going to get it. If you're whatever it is, just don't buy it. but they would bring the prices down. But there's no demand for that. See, there's no demand. The bus boycott. You think about the bus boycott.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it took a community to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It took a community to do that. So I'm looking at the declaration and thinking about community. You know, that's like what I'm looking at. And it says, we declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. This is the International Black Summit Talk Show Network that you're listening to, and we're, Glenn and Henrietta, are in this conversation about economics in the black community. Economics, we're looking at violence, we're looking at peace in the black community. We're looking at abundance, financial abundance in the black community. And so I'm just moving over to the declaration because this is where we stand. This is where we go to align ourselves. And so when I look at the word community or communities in the declaration in the first paragraph, we are declaring our community and all communities whole and complete. And that's, you know, like, what does that mean inside of this conversation? You know, like, what does that mean? When you were sharing, Glenn, I could clearly see 4 or 5 businesses that I could open that would help, you know, a beauty school, a beauty salon, a barber school, you know, a training center for stylists, like a graduate school for stylists who are just getting out of school so that they learn how to work in a salon, you know, to train teachers to be excellent teachers. That's 4 different parts right there, you know. And those would lead into other things, because when you have a business, you can sell anything, you know, just about, not everything, but a whole lot of things you can sell within a business.
Right, and you begin to branch out.
Right, you know. And so I'm asking that we really look in our individual community, in ourselves I'm speaking of, and see what it is that we have to offer the universe, what it is that we have that will change the economics of the black community. What is it that I can do as an individual that will change the black community, change my community? What is it that I can do with another community or with a group of others? You know, I can listen. One of the things we talked about earlier today in another conversation was listening and obeying. You know, we listen a lot. We listen to a lot of different things, but when we, like, I'm getting this information now, I'm hearing it. Am I going to obey what I hear? You know, will I start working on this tomorrow or tonight even? You know, am I obedient to it when it tells me what to do? Not to be concerned about anybody else but just me. You know, if that's what I want to do, if that's what I want to be, will I be obedient to what the universe, what life just said to me? And if not, why not? Like, why not? No. God, is it 7:50, Glenn, already?
Sure.
We have 10 minutes left.
2 minutes? No, we have more than 2 minutes, don't we?
No, 10. 10 minutes.
Ten, yeah. We got, okay. That's all we got, 10.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's what I'm looking at, and I just want to go back to the declaration for a moment and go to the next paragraph where it says, we assert that we are responsible for generating community as possibility and distinction. So that's my responsibility. I am as possibility and distinction. You know, possibility is unlimited. Possibility is like standing in generation and listening and downloading and obeying and moving upon what I hear and opening up, you know, just opening door after door after door because I step into that possibility. About distinction.
Yeah. It's we have the resources, we have the power, we have the opportunity, and so it's for us to keep moving it forward. You know, there was something you talked about, and what reminded me was of being true to ourselves. And part of the conversation of the question for this year is what do my triggers reveal that provides me access to alignment with my authentic self? You know, I think that we as people of Black African descent, our authentic self is creative and joyous, and we can mold that future in a way that people, other people can't. And so it's about us getting back to our roots, getting back to our fundamentals, and getting back to our spiritual beings. The last part of that question is, am I aligned with my authentic self and with my vision? And so one of the things that I think that's very important here at the International Black Summit is to know and to at least have an experience of what your vision is. You know, where does it fit? Explore it. So that you've got some clarity around what it is that you're here. What's your purpose on the planet? Your purpose is inside of your vision. And your vision is different than a goal because your vision is something that you can't do by yourself. A goal is something you can do by yourself. Your vision is much more expansive. So it has to include other people who have vision. And all of you all are working together. And your vision may be inside of their vision, or their vision might be inside of your vision. But they're similar enough that you're working on the same thing and you're working towards your personal vision. So, I mean, it's, you know, all of that is part of that whole, what you said earlier, Henrietta, is the focusing on the peace. There was another quote that I saw that talks about not letting anybody, any outsiders come in to mess with your inner peace. The Dalai Lama said it. And it's really, if we get ourselves centered and cleared, and these are some of the distinctions inside the International Black Summit, for those listeners who are out there, when you begin to get yourself some clarity around your vision and your purpose and what you're and aligning with your authentic self, you can then begin to tap into that creative force. And, of course, that creative force inside a community that we're creating for ourselves, when we begin to have that inside of a community, that will have us have the necessary income to do the things that we want to do and to provide for ourselves, providing for our young people, providing centers for them to experience music, mathematics, science, the finer arts. You know, we have to make that available to our community. We keep hoping that some other community is going to provide us with that, and it's not going to happen. We've got to do it for ourselves. Anyway, back to you, Henrietta. Henrietta, are you there? Where are you? So, but that's what we're talking about. Oh, something. Okay, you got knocked off the mic, girl. Hold on a second. Let me put you back in touch. There you go.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. We thanks. You know, we have a wonderful question this year. And even, you know, I talked about the process one, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, the process that we went through of how that question was generated, how that declaration was generated. And it took a community. It took the community to generate the question. You know, one of the things I was taught in a class one time, the word perfect, I was told, in Aramaic means all-inclusive. And so in Scripture, when it says, be ye also perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect, it means all-inclusive. One of the professors at Morehouse taught us that. He came to, you know, to a seminar, a workshop, and taught us that. And, you know, that meant, that really changed things around. So when we look at the word perfect, it means all-inclusive. You know, when we include everyone, then, you know, things work. It's like the alignment. You know, it's like our process of alignment. And that question came out of a community effort. And not just one community, two communities. The young adult community and the adult community of the International Black Summit conversation at the annual summit event. And that's how it came out of. And so I'm looking at that and thinking, you know, maybe there's an opportunity for some listening, you know, some listening that we can do from a different perspective, that we're, you know, like we haven't been paying attention to. Everything we need is always right here for us. So what is it that we've not been listening to? And we may have heard it a million times, but let's take this week and listen in a different way. And we're listening community this week. And so next week when we come back, let's have some dialogue about listening in our community, hearing what we feel our community might be able to do, or how I can be in my community differently. You know, like really take a look and see yourself in your community, not just living there, but being in community, you know. Not just being in your community, but being in community, you know. So I think that's a good place to, you know, for us to move into this fall season that we're moving into. And to really take a look at this, Glenn, I really love the work that you're doing with the economic piece, you know. And we have two things. We have peace and we have economics. And
absolutely,
they are definitely related.
Yes, indeed.
Definitely related. So we'll continue this for, you know, we'll continue having these conversations and generating peace and generating economics you know, what's the word, Glenn, for the kind of economics that you're intending?
Well, economic development. You know, really economic development. You know, developing
okay.
our economies. You know, generating jobs, incomes, businesses. You know, the vibrancy of Chicago when it was segregated, and you had the barbershop that had the gold chairs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that kind of possibility when we work together. And there are a lot of forces that don't want us to work together. So
right.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Economic development.
Okay. Economic development and peace. Peace. Inner peace.
Inner peace.
Inner peace.
Inner peace.
Yes.
Okay,
yep. So that's where we'll be for a few weeks. We'll be with economic development, and we'll be with inner peace. So take a look at where you see yourself there, and we'll continue this conversation, you know, next Sunday. Remember, we're going to Belize. We're headed to Belize. Thank you so much for being with us. It's good to have you back, Glenn, and I'm glad to be back. Also, I've been gone as well, and it's really good to hear you and be with you again, and looking forward to the mighty work that we'll be doing this next 12 months until the annual summit event. Looking forward to a lot of summit shares, a lot of community summits, a lot of just, you know, working through this question and generating what it is that we see for ourselves. Have a wonderful week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next Sunday, same time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Good night.
Good night, and God bless.